and welcome to another Emmy edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and today I am joined by Kevin Dillon, who is going to talk to us about an interview he did with the costume team for HBO's We're Here. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Clarence. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Excited to chat with you and present this conversation that I did with the costume designers for We're Here. We Are Here from HBO, which many of you may know, is follows the three drag queens, Shangela, Eureka, and Bob the Drag Queen, as they travel across the United States, interacting with folks within the queer community, not in the queer community, to kind of create space for drag. And it was great to get to speak to their costume designers. Each of the three different queens had their own different costume designers. So I got to speak with Shangela's costume designer, Diego Montoya. I got to speak with Bob's costume designer, Domino. And I got to speak with Eureka's costume designer, Patrick Howell. And throughout the conversation, you'll get to hear them discuss how, kind of in the beginning, each of them were on their own with the costume design of the show. They were kind of working slowly with their queen. But the three of them ended up coming together and creating different looks and thematic things for the series. You'll see that progression, and you'll hear them talk about that. And their pride, or their stride of pride, came in episode 4, where you'll see that intro where the queens are walking into the monster truck rally. That's really one of the first moments where they feel like everything kind of came together. You'll also hear them and really emotionally talk about the connections that they still have with a lot of the folks who were on the show. I know Patrick talked a little bit about some personal situations that he experienced, where he connected with one of Eureka's people that she'd put into drag. So that was really heartfelt and emotional. And all three of them are just really passionate about the work that they do, and you'll hear that throughout the conversation. So it was great to get to talk to them about their relationships with the queens, their relationships with the folks who were put into drag, the communities they entered, and the fact that they still keep in touch with these folks is just, you know, was something that I don't know that it surprised me, but that was really meaningful. And you'll get to hear all of that in my conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a tight-knit community. And I love, in one of your pieces, you described the show as Tu Wong Fu meets RuPaul's Drag Race, I think. Something to that effect?
Yeah, it is actually very much that.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and it really is. It like kind of gives you this heart. And I actually spoke to the cinematographers too at some point, and the verite style that they use really lends to the emotional aspect of that. And then the costumes create this very like lively experience for folks who have never been in drag or have always wanted to do drag or connect to their family or connect to their community. I know it was really fun to see that empowering moment of the Native people in drag and the connection to their culture through that, and the empowering scene where you see them raising their fists and talking about, you know, the death of their community, of the way that they can come together through drag. So that was another really cool moment that we got to talk about too. So we got to see like how drag and culture really interlay with this series.
Excellent. Well, I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with the costumers for HBO's We're Here. And just a reminder, if you don't subscribe to the Water Cooler Podcast, please do so on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, because we're going to have even more Emmy content as we head into phase 1 and into the Emmy season beyond. So, Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And please enjoy this conversation with the costumers for HBO's We're Here.
I hope you're all doing well today, as well as can be expected. I know with everything going on, it's been pretty heavy. And so I appreciate you taking the time to talk about your work, which is meaningful and has made an impact on the community at large. I know a lot of people are very excited about this show. So I am recording because it would be so tough for me to to do this and take notes at the same time. So I'm going to cheat because I did write down questions ahead of time. Let me get there.
I wrote down answers ahead of time too.
Oh, good. I love it. We both practiced.
We'll see if they line up.
That would be really funny. It would be like, it would be very Karnak. It would be Johnny, very Johnny Carson of us if they did. I'm going to bet maybe they did.
You just ask a question and I'm going to read an answer.
Perfect. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Like if it doesn't line up, then it doesn't line up. And I'd rather confuse people and like entertain them with some weird answers and just have some fun with it. I know for me, the show definitely had a resonant quality. I lived in two small towns, one in upstate New York and then one in Northwest Ohio. So I definitely had that vibe of like, what does queer community look like in those spaces? So I loved the show exploring queer lives and queer allies. What was your process for the costume design for Bob, Eureka, and Shangela as you went from town to town? Because there is an evolution, there's a process, there's each episode has a different vibe, a different feel. What was that like for you all as you went about that?
Well, for me, you know, I've worked with Bob since he went to shoot Drag Race or really when he came back from it making costumes for him. And so I think the process was a couple of different things. As far as the entrance look, that was about me trying to take at least how I see Bob and what I think he's tried to present with his drag and figure out how to view whatever theme we had kind of through that lens in a way that was going to be really specific and particular to him and have something to say about that in a strong way. And then as far as the performances went, we get a short, like a paragraph blurb about the person, and we have some conversations about what it might wind up becoming. And then sort of taking that information and trying to come up with a concept that highlights them and that Bob is sort of an accessory to. And really, but ideally presents something about the subject specifically and then lets that shine through. That would be how I would look at my process.
Either of you, anything you each would add to that?
Definitely the performers are very story driven.
Yeah.
And it's hard to design for someone you've never met for sure. I mean, you can sort of have an idea, but right. Going into it, you have to be prepared to change everything right away. Mm-hmm. And so I think my process is sort of very open. Like I want to go in with an idea, have a plan, but not be too married to anything. Because it you have to be flexible for everything to change to make the story work as best as possible.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Eureka usually has a specific idea of what she wants, and right. We collaborate from there. Even the storylines, she'll talk to them first, and you know we know what their story is, and sure. She'll toss ideas around for a minute, and then when she's ready, she'll talk to me, and we'll just go back and forth and hammer it out until we have what she needs.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just watching the fourth episode today in prep for our call. And my God, the looks that you created for them as individuals in the intro when they're entering like the, I guess it's like a monster truck rally. Not really my lane. but like they go so well together. You know, obviously each of them has their own style. I followed all three of them, obviously more so since their Drag Race career. I follow Bob a little bit more because I'm a New Yorker and I've seen Bob out and about. But, you know, you blend three different folks who are so different, yet they work so well together. What was it like for you three to kind of create a thematic or cohesive, I guess, garment that really made sure that it was translating to the TV.
And that was a process too, because at first, yeah. You know, we had no there was not, they didn't even think to connect us, all three of us, to sort of can speak and create a really impactful first image. So
we,
yeah, it was, I mean, if you see the first one versus, actually, as they, because they're in the order they happen, they get tighter and tighter and tighter to where the New Mexico episode was, I think, one of our best ones.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I think you can really see how we, you can see the correlation between the three of us in these looks. But that took, that was our sort of effort to sort of, you know, connect together because they weren't, we were not asked to design considering the other queens.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like our own little team.
Right.
But then,
we didn't even know each other in the beginning.
Oh, that's, so have you guys kind of formed like a little bond as you've progressed through the experience?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. We didn't even work together in the first two episodes.
Oh, wow.
We were all separated.
We were in hotel rooms. Yeah.
We're in our hotel rooms making these costumes, like where we were staying.
Wow. That's impressive because you really, like, by that fourth episode, you know, as someone who, like, I love costume design. I think it's an essential character in a television series or a film because it really gives you something. It clues you into who the people are, what you're looking for. And it's really true by the fourth episode when you see, like, the color palette, it all really works very nicely. And so that's exciting to see that it really, like, you formed that bond and been able to kind of see that come to fruition.
I would just add to that, and I think bouncing off of something that you just said, Kevin, was I think that as these things progressed, and I think we all took it further and further as the series went on. But there's something really important about this is what you're going to see that's going to inform you about these three people before a single word comes out of their mouth, before they do anything. Just that image is going to inform the audience about who they are. So it has to say something very, very strong about them. I don't want it to be, oh, wait, which one of them is that going to be? You know, I want you to know immediately, oh, yeah, okay, this is the one who is, you know, that has a darker sense of humor or has a, you know, whatever that's going to mean. In a visual statement, even on a subliminal level, I think that's really informative. And I think that that's an important part of drag in general, is absolutely, that we're sort of creating the sort of the furthest logical conclusion of a concept on a human being, you know?
Right, right.
And Eureka's big, so she wants everything to be over the top.
Go ahead. But that's part of it too, though, is if Eureka's going to be here, then Bob can't be, you know, then Bob and Shangela can't be here. We all have to be here, or it doesn't really make sense.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the other thing that, you know, I know each of these folks as three, I think, individual, separate human beings, because that's who they are, and they each have their own personality, their own style, their own strengths that they really speak to on a daily basis. And watching the three of them work together, because I think they are so different. They are very different people. Watching them work together was beautiful. It really, really, really worked very well together. As you obviously didn't know exactly who you were going to get or exactly what that was going to look like. What were some of the more challenging costume design experiences that you had throughout the process? And are there any that you're very proud of?
I had certain challenges with wings and with being centered, with Eureka trying to get on a trolley with a set of wings on. Yep.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's funny.
I think I'm happiest with her pink dress and Brant's. Was it Brant? No, it's Twin Falls, Idaho.
Yep.
That was the best for me.
What about you two? Was there anything that kind of stands out to you from like either the gals or the folks who they had to kind of transform?
I think I was happiest with Farmington with the alien episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the look that I, that's mostly the work that I do. Anyway,
right.
As part of that. But I was happy with the bigger picture that was created with all three of them together in the desert. I was like, yes, this is really, really strong.
Yes.
And we found a way to work together to make that that image. So I'm proud of that. Yeah. And then actually, if you look at Rustin's, like, following that, the same thing happened again. You know, those titles were really strong visually. The three of them in those environments were beautiful. Yep.
Yeah.
And those episodes were tough because they were back to back.
Right.
Yeah, they were.
Literally back to back.
Oh, wow. Really? Wow. Oh, wow.
Well, none of us found out who our subjects were going to be for Rustin, Louisiana until I found out the day before we left New Mexico.
Right.
So Patrick went straight to Louisiana. I think, Diego, did you fly back to New York as well?
I did for like two days and then back out.
I think we like got there on Saturday morning, had to go fabric shopping and fly to Louisiana on Monday.
Wow.
So we didn't know who we were going to get until then. And actually, I think for us, it changed at the last minute. We had somebody else. And then suddenly we had somebody who was a firefighter. It was really, it's pretty crazy. And so that speaks to what Diego was saying before about you just have to be so flexible on these things and ready to say like, oh, okay, that's not what it is. Or I understood something before that's not the lens that we're viewing this through anymore. So right. I've got to shift my focus to something else. I would agree that I think that for me, that alien look, I think was one of the strongest things.
Very good.
That I got to do. And in general, I think that episode speaking to an aesthetic that wasn't specifically about drag in terms of turning him into a woman, but was about kind of coming up with something that speaks to his life and his story. And I was really proud of being able to come up with that. But speaking to challenges, I would say that for me, the biggest one was in Branson. They want us to submit sketches before we leave, which, you know, you try to do. And again, we've never met these people. I don't really know their story. I'm reading a little bit about them and trying to figure it out. And so I had sent a set of sketches and waited and waited and waited and then heard, no, this isn't what we want, and we don't know what the song is yet. And, you know, so then had to, the day before flying out, come up with something new, shop for that instead, because I had already shopped for all the stuff for the previous thing, and then figure out how to bring that and make that happen instead. And then meet the person and say, okay, what is this really? What is the story? How are we trying to, you know, what can we tell of this to make it be something?
Right.
Something that makes sense on an hour long TV show where there's also, you know, four other people being presented on it. So,
right.
I think every time a show finishes, I feel like, I can't believe we pulled this off.
Right.
Every single time. I'm like, how did this even happen? I thought it wasn't going to. Many of us are like, are we going to finish? Are we going to have a show?
I mean, that has to be like a huge shred of pride for the three of you, because it sounds like you didn't get to meet the people at all, right?
No, we did meet them, but...
You did meet them, but later.
Yeah. Got there.
Got it, yeah.
Once we were there, it was usually like, we would get there, we would have a couple days to work, and then we would have our first drag day with them in those entrance looks. And then like the day after that, we would meet the people or two days after that sometimes. So it wasn't until halfway through the process of shooting the episode that we would have a real sit down conversation. And it's literally what you see in the episodes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was us meeting them. That was when we have those kind of consultation things that they showed for some of the episodes.
Yep. Yeah, I think the thing that I was most impressed, and I want to highlight one element in the fourth episode, the New Mexico one, and then some other ones that really stood out to me, was the thing that all of you did with your costume design was highlighted intersectionality in the people who were to be transformed. So whether it was the queer photographer who was a Navajo who was in a car accident, or the mom whose daughter didn't want to speak to her anymore because of the religious elements of, like, you really brought the story to the outfit. You know, and obviously you talked a little bit about this, you've had some paragraphs and things like that. How did you bring intersectionality to the work that you did? And maybe it was intentional, unintentional, but I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
That's usually, yeah. Go ahead. No,
you. Okay.
Go,
you know, I think for me, that was the biggest part of that was the hardest part of this. That, but also the thing that I enjoyed the most was how do you try to find a way to present a person as being multidimensional and multifaceted in 5 minutes or less.
Yeah.
And they have their performance part of that, and the queen has whatever their performance part of it is. But my job is how much of this person, or in some cases these people, can I show, how many different facets can I build into this without it becoming just a mess? And granted, I think definitely for Nate there in New Mexico, that was the one where I was able to kind of pack the most into it, in part because that was the concept of it, was like, how many different pieces of intersectionality can we, you know, pump into and say a person can be all of things, all of these things. Nobody is defined by their queerness. That's a part of them, but it's not everything. Nobody's defined by their, you know, gender identity. Nobody's defined by their religion entirely. Nobody's defined by, and I think a lot of the time people do define themselves as those things. And especially in these small towns where you sort of wind up with an identity being pinned on you, or if you haven't chosen one for yourself in a group of people where everybody knows each other, I think that it's really easy to say, oh, well, my name is blank and I'm a Christian.
Right.
And in reality, to break that back down and say, no, that doesn't get to define everything about you. And it would be ridiculous for it to. It would be a disservice to you as a person. But I think a lot of, including those of us who are making the show, it's pretty easy to do that to yourself. And I think that was one of the things that was important. And I think is really helpful to say, you can be a Christian and also be queer. You can be, you know, an Indigenous person and also be an artist and also be, you know, all of these different things, even if they do seem to push up against each other, that's actually where the interesting story is.
Yeah.
And I think too, like the drag daughters, thinking of getting into drag for them seems like just like putting on clothes of a different gender, sequin dress, but it's much more layered than that. And it's important for us to put them into the costume, into the look, and to the performance. So it's much more dimensional than I think what they thought about drag before. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
I would hope so too.
And not everybody's comfortable being a drag queen. Some people don't want to do that.
Right.
Domino, your guy that you did, he didn't want to be a drag queen. He was more of a David Bowie character.
That makes sense.
For the Branson, Missouri episode. Yep. And that was one of the tough things is when you don't get to talk to somebody and all I know is that the sort of the bare bones of the story is his sexuality crashing against his religion.
Yep.
And that understanding that under the layers underneath this have some to do with misogyny and have some to do with, you know, the kind of views of man versus woman. And that firstly, that he may not be willing to, and at that point we're at a standstill, but also that's not really what the story is here. So if that's not what the story is, then getting him to dress like a woman is not the answer to the question, right?
Right,
right.
It doesn't fit.
Right.
It doesn't, and it doesn't add anything to it because in actuality it's blocking off whatever it is that we're trying to say about him.
Right.
Or that he might be trying to say about himself that we're trying to help him say.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I admire and respect about the show, because I'm, you know, you'll get comparisons to other shows that do similar things, but to me, this is the one that does it the best and the most successfully because it doesn't feel manipulative of the person's experience, I think. And I think that's one of the things that I love about the show, because to be honest with you, a lot of the other shows I'm not a huge fan of, but this one really vibed with me because, you know, whether it be through the one-on-one conversations or the costume design, everything felt like the person like you connected, whether like it was a lot or a little, like there was a connection between who that person was and what they put that out there on stage. And that was, I don't know, that was really special and meaningful to me as like a queer person who like gender is still something even like that I'm still trying to explore for myself. So it's great to see that you were able to do that. Were there any moments that you were just like, I'm really proud of that. Like, I'm really proud this was said. I'm really proud I, you know, was able to put this product out there. Were there any of those moments that any of you had?
I was really proud of the Farmington episode with Nicole, who was a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And the story she was talking about how she's misgendered often. You know, she wears men's suits, but she identifies as a woman. And she's also misgendered. It's a point of a pain for her. So in this performance, she even was thinking, oh, I'll just do like, you know, drag, like a drag queen, big wig, big dress. And just like making sure that she was comfortable in this performance and bringing out of her what was good, what was special, what she was proud of, which is her strength, her, you know, her swag. And you can do that in a different way with drag without having to go to the obvious place. Right. So I was proud that we could find like her drag performer and just keep it kind of honest to who she is. And we revealed from one suit to another suit for that.
Yeah.
And she looked great. She felt confident. So I was proud of that performance.
Just, Kevin, just to go back to part of what you said in the question, I think part of what makes this show so different from other, you know, similar, you know, nothing is quite the same, but and one of the things that drew me to wanting to work on this project when it was introduced to me was that it didn't feel like, yeah, we're going to meet the person and then we're going to throw a giant wig on them and a dress and heels and it's funny because they can't walk in heels at the end. It was going to be really, the makeover is kind of a secondary element to it, the way that I see it, and that the important thing about it is getting to know a person, a very specific person, or, you know, people and their relationship to one another in a very particular place, and understanding both of those things and how they intersect with each other. And then the drag performance is just, is an expression of that. While it's the end of the episode, it isn't really the end goal of what we're doing.
Sure.
And I think that that's really what makes this feel special. And that was what drew me to it. But I wasn't, you know, you get pitched that and hopefully that's what's going to come out of it. Right. And to get to see the episodes and say, oh yeah, okay, this is what I was hoping it was going to be.
Yeah.
I think has been very, very special. And I appreciate in with all of that and with what Diego was saying, that there wasn't a pressure to say, well, I know that she's, you know, she dresses in men's suits, but this show has to be about drag. So I need to see her in a gown with her tits up, you know.
Right.
With a giant blonde wig, whipping her hair and, you know, snapping her face. Like that we were never pressured to make it be something that it didn't need to be. Where there was never a point where I felt like I had to sacrifice the individual for the sake of the show.
Yeah.
I you know, New Mexico was my favorite spot. And Stacey and Jasmine, for me, I had a personal connection with them because I also lost my sister to suicide. So, you know, it's not the same story, but suicide is suicide.
Yeah.
So that really moved me. And you don't see that in the episode, but behind the scenes, I was falling apart.
Yeah.
Also, I'm really thrilled with the wings and how the impact they had on stage. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that was part of it too, was the more that we went through this process, the more for me, and I think going on with what Patrick was saying, that you have to be willing to, you know, and not a lot of the time I don't know that we as costumers get to kind of do this, but you have to be willing to find a way to find that connection with somebody where you can feel something to translate that. Right. And I think I think both in a weird way, we get to be the lens of that for the audience.
For sure.
Of how to allow them to view this through a personal, you know, through something that you can connect to, even if you don't have that same situation going on with your family. there's some part of us that's of everybody that's felt like the outcast, or that's felt like they, you know, like these parts of themselves didn't really fit together, or like whatever that may be. And I think that that was really, really kind of a great thing about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that for me, I think, I want to be mindful of your times and whatnot, because she was like, oh, 20 minutes. And I was like, oh, with three people, it'll probably take 30. Okay, good. but yeah, I think the show just, it hits the right notes. And I'm a crier. And like, you know, but it's, you know, I think what it does emotionally is it authentically gives you a lived experience of someone, which, you know, I think, you know, that's what you want to see. That's what I think is missing from a lot of queer art out there, is a lot of it feels skin deep, whereas this feels like it's a fully formed or fully lived experience that I got to have about someone's life. I like that.
You can't just leave these people either. I'm still in touch with
Erica
and with Stacy and Jasmine. Yeah,
that's amazing. That's amazing.
So it's not just, you know, and Eureka does too. Eureka still talks to these people. The story is not, it doesn't end with the show. So and Clifton, we still hear from Clifton all the time too.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's great, because that's what I think most of us would hope, like that there is that emotional connection is, you see that there. What about the other, you folks, do you still talk to some of the other people that you connected with?
I've kept in touch with. And even the day when their show came up too, I was happy that they were so proud of the performance. And we created something for them that they could be proud of and feel good about. You know, because for a lot of them, they're not professional performers. They're not, you know, and so we have to make sure that the moving together is something that they can feel good about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think going again to what you're saying and to all of this, that I think that there's so much, we as queer people, I think, have felt so vulnerable in childhood and in, you know, and in small towns, or in, you know, in our communities, in our religions, in our, all of these kinds of things. And so there's a desire to present the strongest, fiercest, most gorgeous, most glamorous, most self-realized version of what being queer means, to say, this is incredible and fuck you if you don't agree.
Right.
And while I think that that's great, and I think that it's wonderful to show people kind of coming into a power that they never got to feel, I think it is equally as impactful to understand the pain that comes behind that strength. The growing pains and the difficulties that go along with that is what defines, you know, is more what defines you as a person than what the shiny exterior of what you've created is. And so I like that this show kind of peeks at that and acknowledges that in a more profound way.
Yeah. Well, I could talk about costume design forever. I am a big fan of the show. I heard it got renewed. It got renewed, right? Is that correct? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It did get renewed, right? Yeah. I'm really excited. I think it's a show that's needed. I know it will be challenging with like production and what that, even the last episode was interrupted, right, in your schedule. I have to ask that question, what was that like as things were unfolding? Were you working on stuff already? Where were you at in your process?
The opening looks were on.
We were there the morning of
it was a Saturday morning, and in the workroom we've all got these entrance looks, you know, putting final touches on, you know, doing these little hand stitching things. All three queens are in the makeup chair getting their faces put on when everybody got an email saying, come and meet in the lobby company meeting.
Wow.
That's where we were. So they all came down, you know, half painted with sunglasses on. I think Bob insisted that he got the rest of his face put on before he came down.
Of course. So funny. Can't.
And then we were there and they said, you know, unfortunately, we wish this were a different way, but we got to get out of here for everybody's safety. And we already knew that the episode was, you know, there was already kind of word about the episode maybe working a little bit differently than we had previously. But it was kind of, we all thought 20 minutes before that meeting, we all thought that we were about to go shoot a drag day in
right.
in South Carolina. We're about to get these girls in these giant gowns and walk them around the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that was it.
That was it, yeah.
So.
Were there, I guess a question that I thought of, just, were there any towns that were harder than other towns? Like, not to like pick on it, like where you had like a more difficult experience, or where that was a little bit, you know, not Ruston, as, where?
Ruston, Louisiana, I think.
Ruston, yeah.
There were places where, like in Branson, there was only one venue that we could find that would,
that's right,
host the show. And in Ruston, the bar that would host the show was so small. And wasn't the fire chief there? And he was like counting heads, telling us, oh, basically, if you're over the limit, we'll shut it down.
That was pretty crazy. And a lot of the time, another thing about this is that we don't really see the venue until maybe the day of.
Wow.
So there's times where you're suddenly going, okay, we've got this plan with Giant, and then you see a stage that's the size of your desk and you go, oh, okay, not with Giant.
And Russell and Eureka had like Eureka, the biggest costume. Eureka
and those wings were not going to fit on that stage in Ruston, Louisiana. That would not have happened. She would have opened her arms to here.
My God.
And would have been touching both walls.
Remember her black and yellow ball gown? She filled up the whole stage.
That was the whole stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to live in Boston, and even really in Boston, there are very few, like, venues where you could, like, even, like, a show like that could be performed, because, like, the drag club is Tom Thumb tiny, and it's, like, you're not going to be honest with you, you probably maybe could fit, I don't know, if you're not calling the fire marshal, maybe 75 people, maybe.
Right. Well, that was
the whole camera crew and like the
right. Not incorporating any of that.
Right. And the one saving grace with that was that they did have a huge outdoor courtyard where that was, I would say, three times the size of the venue itself, that they could let people in and project the performance onto screens out there to kind of let people be a part of it. Because, like I said, there was a line around the block to get in. People are, you know, dying to have this kind of representation happen and are absolutely willing to stand outside to get it, you know.
Like, yeah,
that was an important thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in Bowling Green, Ohio. When I lived there, we had a gay night every Tuesday, and I know, like, people like India Farah and whatnot like would come in from Columbus and whatnot, and they would perform on that Tuesday night, because that was the night, the Tuesday night Columbus gals would come in to Northwest Ohio, because it was good money, like, people craved it. There was no queer space but like 30, 45 minutes away in Toledo. So, yeah, I mean, well, again, I could talk to you all about this for like forever, but I want to be mindful of your days, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I had a great time. The work that you did was fantastic. I am absolutely pulling for the show and across the board Emmy nominations. I really hope it comes through for you all. You really deserve it. And I'm excited for season two. I hope production picks up sometime soon. We need it. I know I need it. And I know all of those folks who work in this industry need it. So I'm sending all the good vibes out there. And thank you. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye, guys. We'll see you soon.